Welcome to the Hostile Zone.
Use your voice, somebody hears you.
Welcome to the Hostile Zone. You're with the infamous and dangerous and always in your face, pulling back that curtain on waste, fraud, and public abuse, and wasting yours and mine tax dollars. Welcome to the Hostile Zone. I am Eric Andrew Sinati, Eric A. Sinati with a really big A. Who?
Eric Sinati, of course.
Right here on the Hostile Zone, on your iHeartRadio, on your television station, depending on where you are, and in more than 300 podcast platforms worldwide, 57 countries or more, every night of the week, the Hostile Zone with Sinati Nation Radio. So welcome to the Hostile Zone, because here we are going to discuss facts, and facts are weapons when the truth doesn't flinch. Tonight's episode is about betrayal, covert, calculated, and cloaked in diplomacy. Quite interesting. Interesting. I'm really, really excited. A lot of stuff. We put a lot of effort into this one. And in an age where strategic alliances, and we all need strategic alliances, it often means sacrificing your sovereignty, sacrificing who you are. And health policy becomes a battlefield. And you're going to find out with tonight's guest about the battlefield that she's going through. Tonight's guest has been exposed to some of the most vile and just off-the-wall things. Folks, this is not a tinfoil hat show. You know we don't do tinfoil hat on the Hostile Zone. So I just don't do it. So just I want you to hear everything with an open mind and to just remember that the Russiagate, Russia situation with President Trump was a case 8 years ago. Now it may be an impending indictment for people in office. So you don't know what the government is capable of until the government does it to you. So I just say, give our guest a chance to hear what it is she's saying, because she's not just sounding the alarm. She's ripping the curtain down so everybody can see. Her name is Janet Fallon. She's an investigative journalist, a foreign correspondent, and the author of At the Breaking Point of History, a blistering, and I mean blistering, indictment of United States duplicity and its role in bioweapon warfare. Biowarfare. Interesting. She's been published in many, many places. Zero Hedge, Activist Post, Global Research, several magazines. She's well-known. She's well-known within the intelligence community and the government community as a whole. She has a bachelor's degree in journalism from the University of Missouri. And she reports from abroad, from an undisclosed location, because of institutional suppression. She had to suppress herself. But I digress. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, the voice of the cone in all of the chaos, Miss Bianca C, S-E-A, like the ocean.
Bianca C, that's me. Hello, everyone.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you for the introduction.
Well, my pleasure. I'm not even done with it yet. When silence becomes a complexity, some other journalists choose to exile. But Janet, our guest tonight, gets in your face. And Miss Bianca is there to offer it up. I understand there's some additional education that that Janet will advise us as we get into the show. So, relevant quote of the day.
What's the quote of the day?
During times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. During the times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. George Orwell, 1984. What a quote. What a quote.
That is a quote.
So, Miss Bianca, before we get into our guest, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling good.
We had a couple week hiatus on the show here. So, how's life been treating you?
life has been good. Stressful, but you know what? Getting organized and accomplishing what I need to do.
Do you know what the fans need? They need to hear a note from you.
A note?
You haven't been here in a minute.
Oh, okay. Hello, everyone. I'm here, and I thank you for having me here. Stay tuned to the Hostile Zone.
Nice. Thank you. In your face with that one. Here we go. Let's throw that out there. Yeah. All right. So now moving with Janet, we have a new, well, not new, but moving up in the executive production world is Alyssa. Alyssa, unmute a second so I can introduce you to the folks.
Hi.
Hello, Alyssa.
How's it going?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. We've been in meetings for hours now, so I think you know how good I am right now. The folks out there, this is Alyssa. Alyssa, how do you pronounce your last name for everybody? Or if you don't want to put it out, you don't have to.
It's Alyssa Salcido.
Now, Alyssa Salcido, but I give everybody a name, and she already has a name. Her name is Atlas. It started Alyssa. Then I realized she's right now the only person on the other end of the booth over there. So she controls the world right now. So she's the Atlas. She controls the world. Welcome to the show, Atlas. Thank you for your help. All right, mute yourself back up and bring Janet into the show.
All right.
Janet!
I am now unmuted.
Hello, Janet.
Hello, Eric.
So, Janet, before we get started, I humbly apologize. Tell us about your graduate study.
Yeah, it's okay. I did my graduate work in journalism at the University of Missouri. I did my undergraduate work at Grinnell College and UC Berkeley.
But UC Berkeley.
Yeah.
How did somebody with a right-leaning mind come out of UC Berkeley?
I don't affiliate, Eric.
I shouldn't ask, but the more intelligent you are, the more you're able to navigate. You're a chameleon. You can navigate in any water too. So I shouldn't have, that was a dumb question, but for the folks out there that don't get it, but so, you've met Miss Bianca Cesea, like the ocean. Mm-hmm. She's very familiar with your stuff. When we've had several meetings, Janet, right? So we spent a lot of time together.
Yes.
So I'm going to give you 30 seconds before we get into some of the segues. Tell us a little bit about what the hell is going on with you and what the hell is going on, because it's a lot.
Well, it's an awful lot. I've been a reporter for over 30 years, and starting around 2000, I began to realize that things were not what they appeared to be, and were definitely heading in a bad direction governmentally. And I decided to use whatever journalistic skills I may have in order to start documenting and talking about.
Can you give us one incident? Because I know there's a lot. Give us one thing.
Oh, there's a lot.
Give us a big one for the folks. Is this so much? And you're going to be on Unplugged, the other show, too, so we can get more in detail.
Mm-hmm. Around 2000, there was an outreach made to me and to my family by someone who was not whom he appeared to be. The name he goes by is Jack Smith. We did discover eventually.
That should have given you the answer right there, right?
Eventually, we discovered that wasn't his real name when everything that he was accomplishing in my life actually blew up in my face. And due to him, my mother was actually legally kidnapped and murdered. And my life became a kind of a series of perils of Phelan, you know, perils of Pauline, like a serial. So I guess that's the briefest.
What was the big thing that you reported on? What was one of the big things? The bioweapons, the water, which one was?
That came later. That all came after the attack on my mother and the decision I made at that point in time to use whatever, you know, small skills God gave me to start documenting our progression into a different world entirely.
So let me ask you, before I get into our segment, because that's, I think I'm going to help you navigate your waters. Tell us one major thing that you've covered that would shock people or that we know that the establishment is trying to bury.
Right. Well, I have covered biological weapons and the planned use of water as a delivery system. And in my efforts to cover that, I have gotten blueprints and more revealing that the water systems have been tweaked countrywide in order to basically function as a weapons.
I would say we would call it a rapid deployment of whatever it is they might be trying to put out. Basically, what you're saying, they would use the water.
The tweaking that I've documented has to do with a selective delivery system, and that's very important to understand because we're not talking about something that goes in at the plant that could possibly affect everyone. We're talking about
unique population.
A selective attack.
Unique populations. They could surgically do things, what you're saying.
I'm saying that they can attack your house, Eric, with this tweaked water system and not the other houses.
And not get the neighbor.
Exactly. Exactly. Which
it's kind of like we talked about in our meeting, the Havana syndrome, where they're saying that maybe there was the directed energy attacks on individuals. So you can get one person without leaving a trace and not touching the person next to them. Ultimately,
there was an interesting article in Military Review that came out in 1970. Wow. Which is quite some time ago, is over 20 years ago, that was talking about it was essentially crowing about how they had cracked the code and they could now basically create ethnic weapons based on a person's individual RNA/DNA profile. And this was over 50 years ago. So
that also
showed an interest in selectivity.
Right.
So
selection is out the window, right? Natural selection is out the window now, right? Now it's government selection.
Apparently.
All right. So let's get into segment one. All right. The Israel-Gaza war, what they are not telling us. So for you, Janet, you've raised serious questions and concerns about the events on October 7th, which we're all aware for the folks that are listening at home or watching, not aware, 2023, October 7th, there was an attack in the Gaza area between Israel and Hamas. We're not going to get all into the details, but that's what occurred on that. And you're talking about the breach of Israel's border security and the 8-hour IDF delay. It's not just a tragedy. It's almost sounding like a setup, is what I understand you're saying. So are we looking at another let you fight them, you look at them and you fight them? Is that going to be that one of those operations, like another proxy situation? Is that what you're saying? Did I get that right? What your opinion is?
My opinion is that this attack was enabled by shadowy forces within the Israeli government. Number one.
We're not talking about Mossad. Are we talking about Mossad?
I'm sorry, what?
Mossad? Are you talking about Mossad, Janet, or just shadowy?
No, I'm not naming the shadowy forces. I'm just saying, okay, number one, that fence is not just a chicken wire fence that somebody threw up overnight.
It's pretty big.
Has more technology and surveillance capabilities.
You can't just walk through it. You got to kind of
It is said that if a cat strolls by the fence, just, it will be picked up at IDF headquarters. But somehow the attack by Hamas on October 7th didn't get picked up and didn't get responded to by the IDF for 8 hours, enabling Hamas to do all kinds of
hostages and everything else.
And killing people. So though the questions about what actually happened on October 7th have been shuffled aside while we're now involved in a full-scale war. But how did this happen? How did October 7th even happen? Plus, there were some female IDF soldiers who witnessed Hamas doing preliminary exercises by the fence. And these female soldiers went, oh my word, they're planning on breaching the fence. And they reported this up at the line of command and were ignored.
Really?
Now, I want to make something very clear here. I am Jewish. I am nominally Jewish because my mother was Jewish. And I certainly do not wish the people of Israel any harm.
Right.
And I certainly am not a pro-Palestinian voice in all this. Now, it happens that I predicted this war in Israel in writing. I predicted it in 2014 in my memoir, Exile, which is available. So I predicted this war at the very time that Iran achieves nuclear capability. Now, there's all this fuss about Iran and their efforts to get the bomb, and Trump says that he after giving Iran 60 days of notice that he was going to attack them if they didn't do something about their nuclear capability, he went ahead and attacked Iran. But there are questions as to the 60 days intervening and or more than 60 days, actually, and whether the uranium was actually moved. So, you know, to be honest, we have to consider that we are very likely in the middle of what I predicted in the epilogue of Exile. And I step further and predict a massive attack following the attack on Israel. I predict a massive attack
on the U.S.
in the diaspora. And that is the capabilities to surgically attack certain types of people are now, you know, pretty much concretely documented.
Right. Yeah, so, we know that because notices went out to certain members of journalism, government, military, emails. We got emails that went out about, so I know exactly what you're talking about, targeting creatures of influence, right? You had something?
Oh, yes, I had. Janet, you referenced the secret war against the Jews, a book that argues the betrayal is systematic and historic, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's made bigger than historic.
Right. What patterns are you seeing today that echo that past?
Well, you know, prior to this administration, we saw efforts by the prior administration to basically screw up the war. We saw efforts to keep certain kinds of weapons away from Israel. We saw all kinds of suspicious sorts of efforts. Unfortunately, there are pundits now who are seeing indications of the same sort of activity in the current administration. I personally do not want to go on the record speaking against the president about.
I don't ever badmouth our president either. I don't think it's appropriate.
No, I don't think so.
We don't need to air our laundry to the world. I respect that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I have been following a university professor in Mexico who is entirely bilingual and was trained actually in the U.S., named Francisco Gil White, who is very firmly claiming that the current administration is actually following the path of previous administrations in terms of this secret war against the Jews. So I just want to let you know, the listening audience know that there are valid voices out there.
And I'm glad that you're mm-hmm. here. We have other people on other shows coming on too. I try not to masquerade a story here. We call it like it is. And we want everybody's opinion to be heard. And we want people to feel informed, whatever your truth may be. And a truth is what that person believes to be true, because it's only a lie if you are truly knowing that you're deceiving somebody. So it's an opinion, right? Opinion is not a right or wrong. It's an opinion. And we have to have opinions, and we have to have them fact-based. And that's why I like you. So our next segment, judicial compromise, bribery in black robes. I'm sure you are familiar with this, so I'm just going to get right to it. So you've investigated the quiet collapse of our judicial system. You've said, I'm quoting you at some point, I don't have the date and time, but you've said that two out of three judges show mortgage histories that have red flags. And we can see this with several people that are being investigated. But what are we dealing with here, specifically with you and Bigger, when it comes to bias, bribery, or is it even something even more dark?
Mm-hmm. Right. Just to clarify for the listening audience, I sort of stumbled upon this method of bribing judges some 10 years back. I was doing some research. I was writing at that point in time for the San Bernardino County Sentinel, and it became clear to me that certain judges were making really bizarre decisions. And of course, you can't really do anything about a judge who goes off the rails.
Can you tell us what the technique is that they're doing it?
Right. So I began to look at everything I could about certain judges. And one of the things I began to look at was their profiles on the county recorder's office. And lo and behold, I found that some of the judges, unfortunately, most of the judges were taking out far more money in terms of their mortgages than they could possibly pay back on their judicial salary. So I started an effort of contacting these judges simply to ask questions. You know, how are you?
You made a lot of friends, didn't you, Janet? You made a lot of friends doing that one.
Yeah, I made a lot of friends. Right. Unfortunately, I made some real enemies, some very powerful enemies. And for example, you know, certain judges are taking out $500,000 loans on their houses, paying them back within a couple of years, taking out another $500,000 dollar loan. So I simply started contacting the judges, asking for, some response, some information as to how they could possibly be paying back these loans. And
in a short period of time.
In such a short period of time. And I began to get some massive kinds of reaction. One judge in San Bernardino County immediately left the bench. I had other judges who were immediately resigning the cases that prompted the inquiry.
Wow.
And so I began.
Did you publish?
Sorry?
Did you get published on this?
Yeah.
Can you name the title so the folks can go look and read it? Say it on what it is.
Right. I was published in the San Bernardino County Sentinel initially on this.
San Bernardino County, California. Sentinel. Okay.
Right. And then I began to intervene in particular cases where it looked like people were getting pretty badly abused by these judges. Right. And the intervention
for some, and other people hung by chains and thrown in the river. Right.
Well, you know, people were ending up in jail who shouldn't be in jail. People were having all of their assets seized who shouldn't.
They like to do that with bail because they can suck your assets dry and attorney fees and then throw the case out.
Well, in this one case,
it costs your fortune. You never get that money back.
In this one case, which was widely published, and it ended up in a chapter in my 2021 book, At the Breaking Point of History, I intervened in a case that was in federal court where the litigant, a Mr. Harris in Georgia, was being threatened with sanctions by the judge. $50,000 worth of sanctions simply by trying to make his case, and was standing to lose everything. And based on my simply contacting the judge, asking some questions, the judge freaked out, dropped the case, and ran for the hills. And Mr. Harris is now happily living on his farm in Georgia, unmolested by further court.
Well, that's good for him. Wow. And unfortunately, so many others not so lucky. Ms. Bianca, you had something?
Yes. Janet, when the courts go corrupt, democracy follows. How deep does the rabbit hole go, and what does it mean for those seeking justice?
You know, that's a very good question, and I really appreciate your asking it, because apparently
she really cares. She's like a total, her heart's in it 100%, like she's in it. Yeah,
apparently the rabbit hole goes pretty darn deep. For example, there was a presentation made in front of the Arizona State Legislature a couple of years back where, lo and behold, a researcher, not me, was alleging that certain public officials were receiving bribes and payouts via their mortgages. And, I mean,
you know, by the way, we're going to throw a caveat in there. Don't forget, the New York State Attorney General Letitia James has in the same case on her in Virginia right now. The one that went after Trump. She prosecuted, they're going to prosecute Trump, Letitia James. Mortgage fraud, Virginia.
Okay, I will have to look that up.
You heard it here, Virginia, Northern Virginia.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you.
My pleasure.
What happened to the member of the legislature, Arizona State Legislature, who sponsored this presentation, was absolutely redolent of a cover up. She was thrown off the state legislature by the other legislators, some of whom were named as receiving bribes in this matter by the researcher in her presentation. So it appears to be an issue that has received quite a bit of attention, and there appears to be a dedicated cover-up going on. So Arizona State legislator who sponsored this presentation is named Liz Harris, and you can Google her and you can find out how all of the mainstream media is saying, oh, that bad Liz Harris, look what she did.
If you have things you can email me, I'd like to see them.
Okay.
If you have stuff, you know, because we can't do it during the show, I would like to see it. I would cover it.
Sure.
Well, so I'm gonna bump you to the next segment. Take it away. I can cut off on something else. Go, keep going.
Okay. I had wanted to address some of the other concerns that were just raised about this, like how far does this rabbit hole go? Because if one group, one branch of government has been essentially taken down, it has effects on the other two branches of government.
One can't operate without the other.
Exactly.
Right in my book, so, my book right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Written into the U.S. Constitution.
So we can talk about checks and balances and how fundamental they are for a democracy. But, you know, that would be a very lengthy conversation.
And then you go on. And we covered this on the show. We know about the levels that agencies will go through to destroy your name, to destroy your finances, so you can't defend yourself, because they don't want somebody to defend himself. Because if they did, then more people would speak up, and then maybe wouldn't be able to get away with everything you get away with. But moving on to the next segment, bioweapons and U.S. policy. We're at a breaking point here, I think, too. I'm with you on this one. So in your book, At the Breaking Point of History, lays out the case of U.S. agencies having been covertly enabling biological weapons agenda. Clearly, there's a lot to unpack with this one. How do you link that to COVID-19 pandemic? And what evidence should every American see?
Well, the COVID pandemic appears to have cut a wide swath through the population and appears to have ended up with a lot of dead people who didn't necessarily need to be dead. For example, there was a program launched immediately to intubate in hospitals those who presented with COVID-19. And then it was discovered that if you intubated a person with COVID-19, they die.
More chance to die.
Now,
having been intubated, you have a 50% more. Having lived, I was on life support myself, not from that, but from in the line of duty situation. Okay. And you have a 50% minimal chance of being on life support and dying in the future once you're on life support. So I knew where you were going, and I like that you said that, because most people don't realize that. Once you give your body over to life support, your body doesn't want to take control again. And if it ever needs to be on life support, it may just give up control. So I like that point that you made up, because a lot of people did not need to be on life support.
At the point in time where I became aware that that there had been a shift in U.S. policy and they had realized what intubating COVID patients would actually do to them, I was actually in a taxi in southern Mexico listening to the news. And the news was reporting all these sick COVID patients in a neighboring town, Comitán, all of whom were being intubated. So, you know, whatever was discovered in the U.S. about the dangers of intubation was being unfortunately replicated in Mexico. I personally began to ask everybody I knew, you know, do you know anybody with COVID? What are they doing? And people here were pretty savvy, and they realized right away that if you went to the hospital with COVID, you'd probably come out in a body bag. And people were sharing with me, you know, what sort of herbal remedies they were taking and so forth. So,
Well, while COVID feels like yesterday's crisis, there's a treaty being signed right now with WHO that could override national health decisions. Is this pandemic policy or pandemic power grab?
Right. There's not only a pandemic treaty on the table, there's also amendments to the international health regulations.
Who? She meant the World Health Organization. I just wanted to make sure people
Okay. There are also amendments to the international health regulations that would have a distinct effect on pandemic policy. So, you know, my concern here, and the concern of many COVID researchers, is that there is a global effort to create a series of binding instruments where if there it should be another pandemic, individual sovereign nations would have to obey the treaty accord and
You mean just like we obey the treaty in Antarctica? Mm-hmm. Where did, you mean just like that treaty that everybody's obeying right now in Antarctica?
I don't know about that. Tell me about that.
Nobody's supposed to be there.
Oh, is that what it says?
Yeah, well, not supposed to be any military there, yeah.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Wow. So I wonder, it's one of those treaties. Those treaties, you know. Yeah, some treaties we do, some treaties we don't.
Now, in the process of my research and my concerns about biological weapons policy in the U.S., I attended on two different occasions, once in 2011 and then again in 2016, I attended the International Biological Weapons Convention, which was held in Geneva, Switzerland, at the United Nations. And I saw firsthand almost unbelievable efforts by the U.S. to micromanage international biological weapons policy in ways that were completely corrupt.
Wow. So,
yeah. And I don't want you to give specifics. I don't want any problems. For you.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. You can read all about it.
I want to unplugged and do that when you come on my other show, but I don't want to have Miss Bianca see if we get in the nitty gritty when we start talking about things that might make some people angry. I'd rather it just be you and I.
Okay.
So, folks, sure. If you're enjoying, it gets a lot deeper when we get her on unplugged. So, we're into the next segment because you know we
the
are
title unplugged.
Unplugged. We're going to unplug, and we pull the curtain back here. But we pull the power on the other show. So censorship in exile, journalism without borders. That's you, the journalist without borders. You've chosen to live abroad. Clearly, you've chosen, but for many reasons. It's not a retreat, though. You're not retreating because you're here right now with the camera on, the microphone on. You're not in retreat. It's a strategy. Tell us about the cost of telling the truth and how the world punishes you or such.
Well, there have been some repercussions, to put it mildly, for the path I've chosen.
And you want to give us some, like one or two?
The repercussions started surrounding the situation that affected my mother, which resulted in her death. And for those who are interested in finding out more about that, you can look at Exile, or you can come to Unplugged, because we'll be talking about that.
Is there an email you'd like to give out to people too, if they want to reach you? And I can say it on the air if you'd like.
People who'd like to reach me can email me at write2janet. Number two, write to Janet at proton.me.
Oh, you're smart with the proton.me. Yeah. Is it write a W-R-I-T-E, right?
Correct.
Write the number two, Janet, at proton.me. Now, this is not a sponsored segment. However, I am a Proton premium user. So is Miss Bianca here. Anybody in government and journalists and things of the stuff that we deal with, Proton is the way to go. They have a whole thing, and we're not sponsored. I'm not getting anything from them. I just like that you use it. And I think more people should know it's open source, truly end-to-end encryption. So, Ms. Bianca, I got something for you.
Yeah, Janet, from shadow bans to legal threats, truth has a price. Janet, how do you keep reporting while the system wants you silent?
With some difficulty, I have launched an effort to contact certain institutional representatives.
You want to name any names here? Maybe
that. Yeah, I sure do. I'd like to mention Congressman Rick Allen. Rick Allen. I maintain a permanent address in the state of Georgia. Therefore, Rick Allen is my congressional representative. I've also contacted Senator John Ossoff's office, and I'm finding that nobody wants to deal with me.
Ted Cruz? Have you tried Ted Cruz?
Who?
Senator Ted Cruz?
Ted, I'm sorry.
Ted Cruz?
No, I haven't tried.
Might be someone interested to hear what you have to say.
Well,
I'll forward up the information as well that I have.
Great. Because at this point, I'm being kind of rudely responded to by Allen's office, by Ossoff's office. Ossoff's office has actually...
These emails, by the way. I just want you to know I spoke with Atlas about it. I've read them, just so you know.
Okay. Well, Ossoff's office has gone so far as to say, well, you're talking about attacks by a foreign government, and we don't have anything to do with that. No, I'm not. I contacted them specifically with the names of two federal agencies which are involved in stripping me of my rights.
And I can say this for you, Janet. Mm-hmm. We have set up surveillance on your location, and we have captured audio and video of things that are anomalous, let's just say.
Yeah, well, and I want to thank you for that.
Janet can verify that we were doing surveilling with audio and video.
That's wonderful to know. And I've also
I'm making sure that folks know that my team did this, and I want people to know.
I really want to
don't get me in trouble that I'm a voyeur. That's what I'm saying. Make sure you let them know you knew that we were videoing or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I've also filed a lawsuit, which is now languishing without judicial action for over a year at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Nancy Pelosi's district.
Sorry?
Nancy Pelosi's district.
Well, it's enumerated as 24:4242, and you can see where I am documenting certain kinds of activities that
are
completely illegal.
Directly came and sued a three-letter agency. You want to name that agency?
Yeah. Well, the lawsuit is named Palin versus CIA. And the reason I chose CIA was I am outside of the country, and the CIA is the intelligence agency that is titularly involved.
Jurisdictionally, their control. Yeah.
Right. I'm not saying that the problem began.
You're not making any accusations here, but that's what you named, because jurisdictionally, the FBI would have no jurisdiction outside the states.
Interestingly enough, the lawsuit was initially filed in the Central District of California, and it was immediately attempted to be dismissed by a Judge John Holcomb, who completely soiled himself in citing the wrong cases, misstating the relationship between a U.S. citizen and the government. He said, you can't sue the government. Well, people do all the time.
Everybody knows you can sue the government. Those days are over.
Yeah. And he also misstated case law. So I immediately filed a notice of appeal because he was attempting to stomp all over my lawsuit. And the Ninth Circuit contacted me and said, well, why should we allow you to proceed? Because, you know, John Holcomb said your lawsuit was...
Well, that's their job. They are the appellate court, right?
Deleted. So I responded over a year ago to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and I responded very rationally and with case law, and they just froze up on me.
Last I understand, the Ninth looked at it somewhere in July of this year. It was looked at again, from what I understand.
Well, that's great that they're looking at it.
I don't know what actually is occurring. I do know that they're reading the file. Somebody is. I don't know what is happening. The only source I know is that it has been a conversation.
Well, that's good to know. But what I'm asking for in the lawsuit, I'm not asking for a penny. I'm asking for an injunction. I'm asking for them to simply stop what they are doing, which is
relief from harassment.
Horrible harassment, life-threatening harassment.
Can you give a couple examples of the life-threatening?
I am being uniformly denied medical care. I said, I can't even get my blood pressure taken. So if
we can verify that, we've spoken with medical professionals. They refuse to treat you. Refuse.
Yeah, they do. Right. They refuse to treat me.
Refuse.
So, and it's not a matter of ability to pay because I'm able to pay.
Well, yeah, people are willing to pay for you. I know this. So I know that they refuse to help you.
Yeah.
I can attest to that. My whole team can.
Right. I'm also alleging that I am being denied access to the legal system because actually, you know, with checks and balances, if the, you know, executive branch errs in pursuing a completely non-culpable and innocent party such as myself, according to checks and balances, we should I should find remedy through the court.
But what's the one thing when you hear checks and balances, Janet? I hear check.
When I think of check.
So I'm wondering how balanced somebody is when the checks are rolling in their favor. I don't know. I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but you make a lot of sense in some of the, in a lot of the stuff you're saying. You make a lot of sense. We did set up surveillance on an audio and video anomaly recordings for you. We got 50 plus hours of video and audio of everything in your surroundings. So I'm with you on it. I'm going to go to the next segment. Okay. I'm going to move forward.
Sure.
All right. So it really is kind of a continuation. So it's what comes next? Fighting your invisible war, not an invisible, it's your invisible war. So you've written about the biological warfare, corrupt courts, international betrayal. But what is the next? And I mean the next real big threat that the mainstream and the traditional media and the average John Q public just doesn't see. It's not covering or not being told.
Well, I think that we're in a lot of trouble, Eric. I mean, I think that our government has been, I think there's been a quiet coup. And I think that we do not.
Even under this administration, even under this one?
Unfortunately.
Okay. All right. I'm open to hear any side. I'm not going to attack you.
It looks as if Trump is doing stuff, but the question is, why is he not addressing the corruption in the courts? Why is he not?
Of all people, he knows. He's experienced it. So
Exactly. And all he has to do is go onto national TV and say, I just learned that these judges are on the take. And
I want to know about it. I'll run several episodes on it. Whatever you give me, I'll run it because I think that that's a travesty. I've had an issue with judges and prosecutors being elected for forever. Depending on where you live, a judge should never be elected, and especially elected under a party line, and prosecutors the same. I understand how the game is played. I understand, but it takes money to get into office. And the only way to get that money is to write the check yourself, like our president did, and he got himself. And in a good way. I mean, he used his money to campaign, but somebody else needs donations. So if you're running for a position where you're deciding fact and life and things like that, how loose can you be? How loosey-goosey can you get with collecting money? I just don't agree with it. I just think we're better with staggering appointments. You know, if it's a 4-year presidential term, the judicial appointment is, there are the prosecutorial appointments or whatever, whoever's holding office, should be a 5-year appointment with you in office for 4 of them. So this way they're staggered and you don't have a monopoly or a control. That's just my opinion. What say you?
Well, you know, the FBI has been approached about this issue of judges accepting bribes, and they uniformly cut off contact with the person who is making that report. It's not only me. There have been a number of others who have done this research.
I'm very familiar. When you send that email, you get one blanket response and nothing else.
Well, you get a response saying, we don't want to talk to you anymore.
Yeah, they want nothing to do. It's just what I'm saying. You get a blanket. Good night. Thank you for reaching out, but there's nothing we can do. We're out of it.
Well, I think that gives the FBI a lot of latitude there.
All right, I'm not trying to give them a lot of
my experience is that
I don't want to sound that way, Janet. So if I sounded that way, reword it. I meant was that you're not going to get the response you're thinking is what I'm saying.
No, you're not going to get a response because, you know, frankly, if the judiciary has been compromised, and believe me, there are other ways of paying off a corrupt public official beyond his mortgage. That's only one vehicle.
Right.
Yeah,
that's only one vehicle. And in a recent article, I enumerate many other vehicles for doing so.
Would you like to name one or two other vehicles? I'm interested to hear.
Well, sure. One way is to hire a family member of the corrupt political figure's family and, you know, give him a position he isn't qualified for and pay him a whole lot of money for it. That's another way.
You make me laugh. You know, I'm not going to name a name because I don't want to throw the guy under the bus, but he held high office and he we know how the patronage game is played, right? We know the spoil system, right? Mm-hmm. For people that aren't up on American history, the spoil system is where, created the whole Civil Service Act. The government jobs were given based on who was elected. To the winner goes the spoils, right? Mm-hmm. This individual held high office and he did one of those positions, but he put this person in such a key position that it was exposed within less than like a month. Like, why couldn't he make this person a position that nobody gives a crap about? Nobody pays attention to the Secretary of Agriculture. You couldn't name the name if you wanted to. But when you name Department of Justice, Homeland Security, these are names you know. Why would somebody, and I just, you got me up on a sea hole, I call it a sonati hole, I could chant on forever, but you really hit a bug with me on that one. Because that's how it's played. That's how the game is played.
Yeah, there's also, and this is not very well known, you can also pay off a corrupt public official by giving him a nursing home bed and the income that comes in from the nursing home bed. Yeah.
In-kind donations. It's called an in-kind, in-kind, K-I-N-D, in-kind donation. And they're actually just somebody anonymously is donating your mother's bed to the nursing home. That's $4,000 a month. I have heard of that. That's very hard to trace. You've stepped into this. No wonder why
it's
you had to go.
Very hard.
No wonder why you got to hide on a video with me here. I wouldn't talk about that either.
I also was researching some judges in the state of Nevada, and there were three judges I was researching at that time. Two of them had mortgage histories redolent of like, oh my gosh, what are they doing?
My brain is firing away here.
The third one did not have that sort of mortgage history. However, another reporter, a reporter in Las Vegas, told me that that particular judge was using casinos to launder money. And he'd walk into a casino and they'd go, there he is. And they'd give him all, but, they just give him chips. So there are all kinds of ways to do this. Yeah. And it does appear that this mortgage scam is the favored way to
do it. Well, check it out, Letitia James, New York State. And the case is coming out of Virginia.
Yeah.
Ms. Bianca's got something for you.
And how can everyday Americans, those without press passes and political power, fight back?
Well, that is the $64 million question.
You're getting deeper questions than me. I got to talk to our...
That is a wonderful question.
It was a great question. I wanted it.
One thing you can do is if you are in court, you can start to research your judge. Because just recently, I did an intervention concerning a case in Arizona, and the judge was excluding court watchers from the courtroom. And after, my tendering questions about her loan history, she decided that she would reverse herself and allow all court watchers into the courtroom. And furthermore, she wanted nothing further to do with the case. So, you know, doing this research is having a salutary effect on justice. Unfortunately, we don't have enough people doing this research right now. We have a couple of people that I'm aware of, Rick Abrams in California, Renee Weiler in the state of Michigan, are all onto this mortgage scam, but we need to have an army of people doing this research.
The problem is, as soon as you come up with one answer, there's another place for it to default to.
Yeah.
It's so hard to connect the dots, and they spend so much money on let's just put it, and I'm not making any opinion piece, but they spend so much money on your P. Diddy cases, and you want to know all about Epstein files, but there's so much stuff going on, and I'm not excusing anybody's behavior. I'm not making comment or passing a judgment on any of those cases. I'm merely talking about the legacy, old school media. And the government in tandem, you might as well, when you say one, you're saying the other. They're together in tandem, doing it the way they want to do it. And that is just, there's nothing you can do about that. It's just what it is. I mean, what are you going to do? What can you do, Janet? What can you do?
Well, I think we can start to get honest. And I think the media has really been dropping the ball. For example, every time that I see a new article on these horrors going on in guardianship court, I contact.
Don't get me in family court. We covered that. Yeah, that's a travesty there.
Right. So I contact the writer and say, "Excuse me, but none of this could happen if it weren't for the judge. And so why don't we start by looking at the judge?" And uniformly, it appears that the mainstream media, the legacy media, doesn't want to go there. So shame on them, you know.
And 100% shame on them, 100%. So we're coming to the circle of our close. So I'm going to hit you with the closing, and then we're going to thank you. But I'm going to have Janet back on Unplugged, and there will be additional during our time slot. We have exceeded our hour time slot, but all of the entire show will be available to download on iHeart and all the podcast platforms after the show is on. But we're going to move into the next segment here of the summary and closing. But I do want to say, I want to give you 30 seconds to say whatever it is you want to say. I'm going to give you a minute. Take it, it's yours. 1 minute. Mark the timer, Atlas. Mark, give her 1 minute and shut her mic off. I'm just kidding. Yeah, it's yours.
Well, I have recently been reading a book called Nexus, by Yuval Harari, whom I want to say I have been singularly unimpressed with his video interviews. Nevertheless, he has been talking about, in this book, Nexus, he's been talking about the mechanisms in democratic systems to self-correct. And he's claiming that they do not exist in totalitarian systems. And I want to state uncategorically that they apparently do not exist in our so-called democratic system.
Democratic Republic.
Right. But they don't exist.
Right.
And they have been one of the mechanisms that Harari talks about is the courts. And by attacking the courts, they have pretty much expletive deleted up any semblance of freedom and justice that we have. So I guess that summarizes my concern.
Well, and I humbly thank you for coming to the show, Ms. Bianca.
Thank you so much for having me on, Eric.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for excellent questions, both of you.
Yeah, we put a lot of thought into it. And, you know, I put a lot of hours into looking at your stuff. And I do thank you. I do know I've read all of your stuff. I wanted to let you know I did see those emails recently. I just can't respond to everything, but I did read them all.
Good.
And I do see them. And I know what's going on. And I want to attest to a lot of what you're saying. I've experienced myself seeing it with on your working on your stuff. And it's a shame, but I do thank you. I'm sorry that you're struggling and suffering. We're going to have you on the next show, Eric A. Sinati Unplugged, and we're going to get into the nitty gritty details. But stay in the green room. Don't go anywhere. Okay. So Janet isn't just writing stories. She's really not. She's revealing strategies. She truly is. She's saying a whole lot more to me and to everybody than what she appears to be saying. Truthfully.
Right.
And if you've been the victim of corruption, you've been the victim of a biased system, you've been the victim of these things, then you know it exists.
Yeah, you would understand
but
even more.
If you haven't, you don't know. But this does occur. Whether it be bio warfare, border deception, the bottom line is every challenge that she confronts, she doesn't confront it with silence, and they're doing everything they can. And I say we don't know what agency, what department, we don't know. And if we did, it's not for us to say, but somebody's trying to silence her very clearly, that's happening. And I do appreciate that she's here, and I appreciate that people like Janet, like us and other people are willing to sit here and take the hits and say something when we think something should be said. And sometimes there are, people lose, people die in war. People die in war. Well, she's fighting a war herself right now, and she's staying alive. She's got that hand raising in there, keeping her hand up out of that water saying, I'm not underwater yet. But I don't know.
I agree. Sun journalist Chase headlines, Janet chases the truth.
And she really does. Yeah.
And in this era of deception, that makes her dangerous to the right people.
That was the key word. It makes you dangerous. Mm-hmm. The truth is dangerous. And someone who's not afraid of you, and your corruption, you know who you are. You people that are out there that are doing these games and using your positions for personal gain or to target people that you see as an intellectual challenge, as a challenge to every essence of you, of a quote-unquote, air-quoted, leader, then that's true fear. Because you're fearing people like Janet, other people like myself, and people who challenge you and are willing to go toe-to-toe with you in running for office or in the back alley, at least for me. I'll wait outside for you. So if you're afraid of that, then what do? You use your job, your position, and our tax dollars to go after that person. You're weaponizing government. You're a disgrace. You're a nothing. You're a nobody. You're a nobody, and you're never going to be anybody. Say goodbye to your brother. You're next. There's a whole crew of people that are facing the chopping block, and Janet's just one of the people that are helping to expose it. Before I get angry, because when I think of corruption, and I'm spending a lot of hours on the phone with Janet, and some of the things that she's experienced is just insane. Folks, I thank you very much for coming to the House Style Zone. I thank you, Miss Bianca, for being with me. A lovely episode. Pound to you. Folks, the House Style Zone coming at you all the time, every time, anytime, on your iHeartRadio, your FM dial, some of your cable stations, if we're not, demand it, on every single podcast platform, 300-plus podcast platforms. We're available. Book for us. Check me out, Eric A. Sinati, Unplugged. For an additional interview with Janet, I thank you very much for coming out this evening. And myself and Bianca, we thank you. God bless America. Now we're going to go to Miss Bianca's pipes. She's going to close us out.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we have at the twilight. Last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket. was still there.
And she's not going anywhere.
Oh, say does that star-spangled banner